Me han invitado a...
Hello, I've been invited to talk to you. The people of Montreal who may be listening to this interview. I wonder what I could tell you about. What could we have in common, people in Mexico and people in Montreal? I've been thinking that something that concerns both our countries, the ASPAN in Spanish and the SPP in English, the North American Security and Prosperity Partnership, is the loss of sovereignty for both our countries, as the agreement allows for the U.S. to increase its so-called security perimeter, which extends from the north of Canada to the south of Mexico. There's something that has been affecting us since the North American Free Trade Agreement, which represented the total bankruptcy for our rural economy. Also, I don't know how similar it is for both countries, but here they call it the war on crime and the fight for public security. In Mexico, it's a complete lie. The government is telling us that they are fighting organized crime, but in reality, they are criminalizing and repressing social movements, accusing social activists in the criminal system, trying them, and imprisoning them. This makes me think about the concept of terrorism. This word has been manipulated through fear. It's been manipulated over time. Fear has been manipulated in different ways. In the period from the 40s to the 70s, we could say that fear was manipulated with the ghost of the Cold War, with anti-communism, the fear of an international conspiracy and international espionage. Beginning in the 90s, fear was directed against a so-called international terrorism, a worldwide enemy of civilization. But in reality, this was applied to any person, to people who fight for change in their communities. Social movements have been made to seem like terrorists and must be repressed. The excuse of terrorism is used to attack civil and democratic liberties that have been gained in the last decades. And it has also meant the loss of basic human rights. I don't know how this has played out for the population in Canada. I don't know much about what's going on there. I know there are those so-called security certificates, which are used to classify people in terms of whether they are secure or not secure for the country, if they have relatives abroad who participate in some kind of struggle, or simply to control immigration. Here in Mexico, this takes place in the form of labeling social activists as terrorists, even though they have nothing to do with this. What made you get involved in social struggle? Let's say that I got involved because of reality. Of course, this is very broad. There are many things that, little by little, were pushing me towards social struggle. I can't say that it was only one thing. Maybe the fact that I lived in a city that was surrounded by many Nahua indigenous towns. And over the years, seeing their misery, their exploitation, the oblivion to which they have been subjected to, made me aware and sensitive towards their social problems. Later, when I was a teenager, when I was about 17 years old, I had to work in a stationery store. There, the boss would make us work for 12 hours a day. That was the official work day. The shop opened at 9 a.m. and closed at 9 p.m. However, when the doors closed at 9 in the evening, the workers would stay until midnight, arranging the supplies for the next day. That was a clash for reality. That was a clash with reality, which made me think about the situation that all workers find themselves in. Some years later, certain circumstances brought me in contact with relatives of political prisoners. In the state of Veracruz, where I lived, cities like Orizaba, Córdoba, Perote, Jalapa, there were political prisoners at that time. When I met their relatives, I also got to know the prisoners, and I saw that some were students as young as I was. I listened to their stories. They had been repressed for supporting an indigenous struggle. There were other political prisoners who were peasants. They had been jailed because the government wanted to take their lands. There were all kinds of prisoners, like prisoners that were part of a guerrilla, and that's why they'd been detained. There was everything. That's when I started to become active in the social movement. I participated in the struggle for the release of political prisoners. Some years later, I was about 20 or 21 years old, I took part in an indigenous movement in the mountains of Zongolica. There, an organization was started and defended many municipalities. It all started with the struggle against a logging company, which was clear-cutting the forest there. We were able to win that struggle. We were able to drive out that company. Then people continued organizing themselves, this time for other demands, like new roads, highways, the right to commercialize their corn. The movement was able to grow quickly. They also fought the imposition of government authorities. Then the state, not the local or municipal government, but the state government, began to repress the movement. I was detained and disappeared for 4 days, and some of our comrades were detained as well. After that, there were permanent surveillance on us. I was unable to go home. I had no other choice but to flee. I was trying to protect myself from being detained or disappeared. I left that mountain region, and without belonging to any armed movement, I had to change my name and the place I lived to avoid arrest. It's like I lived a clandestine life, but without being part of any armed movement. I didn't want to be detained or disappeared, that's all. You have to remember the reason for this fear at the time. There had been 15,000 arbitrary detentions, of which to this date, 2,650 remained disappeared. Some years later, I tried to contact a clandestine political military organization in what is known as an armed movement, or also known as a guerrilla movement. It was state repression that made me move towards this form of struggle. You're part of a political military organization. Could you tell us where the proposals of that organization at the time in which you were part of it? I belonged to the ERPI. That's the Insurgent People's Revolutionary Army. I was detained after a year and a half of its formation. The organization was formed due to a division from another armed organization. The The difference was that the ERP wanted to emphasize the construction of what we called people's power, or popular power. We proposed that there were various ways to build this grassroots power, and all are necessary. One is autonomy or self-management, which is something like self-determination, production and regulation of our social and economic life. The other one is the idea of participative and direct democracy. And the last principle is the idea of integral self-defense. We propose this because we believe that while armed struggle cannot be discarded, it should be a second recourse. It's more important to construct a strong social and popular movement, and the people don't wait for an authority to solve their problems. No matter how good this authority might be, we believe that this is not possible, that independently of the good intentions of the authorities, there are very strong interests that take over. The other thing is that when people don't participate in the decisions that directly affect them, they leave space for apathy or indifference, which can favor a few, and the corruption of authorities as well.
Del pueblo puede favorecer también la corrupción de las autoridades. Entonces, el poder
so, popular power is precisely when the people participate in decisions that are important for their community. For instance, autonomy. There are autonomous communities, there exists a community-run police system. In different places, autonomy can be expressed in different ways. But this refers to organs of power that are independent of the state, as its existence doesn't depend on the state authority, but rather the communities themselves are resolving their needs. The community itself is organizing whether the authorities are like it or not, and whether they support it or not. Autogestión, self-management, is when people develop their own health centers, their own schools, their own commercial networks for their products, their own projects that make the people take matters into their own hands.
La gente toma en sus manos una parte de la economía.
In this way, the economy is not something totally foreign to the community. Direct and participative democracy, like I said, is the most tangible. The most tangible are municipal authorities, but we often leave them to act by themselves, and that paves the way for their corruption. If people take part in their own decisions, then they are participating. In their own destiny. This does not mean that we deny representation, but rather that representation is controlled by popular participation. Integral or complete self-defense is more than simply military defense. As we consider it to be much more, we understand that a community which has already constructed, for example, its autonomous municipality needs to defend its economy, its schools, its culture. This is an integral self-defense because we defend ourselves from all that wants to damage the community's social fabric. That is to say, we defend ourselves to protect our culture, economy, education, health, and of course, when it is necessary, we defend ourselves by the use of force. These are the main principles of our organization. But there are many more, such as the humanization of the struggle. We must remember that we're talking about an armed organization. We were proposing the idea of humanizing armed struggle. We also put forward the idea that it's not a vanguard that will bring about change, but rather it's the popular movement, the people in a general, who can bring about change.
Hablas de la autodefensa y mencionas también la parte.
You talk about self-defense and mention the use of violence or force. Could you talk more about this? What's the role of armed movements in the struggle for social change? How does armed struggle and non-violent movement work together? What can you tell us about the accusations that were made against the social movements and the guerrillas when they were portrayed as violent? Yes, this is a complex issue. We could start by saying that the popular movement has many forms of struggle. There is the non-violent struggle or peaceful social movements. There is armed struggle. There are electoral struggles, civil struggles, which defend certain forms of authority or government, but that aren't rooted in a political party. Rather, they're rooted in community participation. So those are civil struggles. All of them contribute to social change. Each of them have different methods. I don't believe that any one of them can be discarded. The issue is more when to use which method. And you can't decide that at will, or because you prefer one way over another. Rather, it's determined by the historical context, the material situation that will determine which form of struggle is more viable at that moment in time. I do not condemn any one of them. I do not discard any of them. But I do consider at this moment it's most important to strengthen the non-violent social struggle in its aspects. In its civil aspects, we really have to strengthen the social movements. If we look at history and how change has been made in different countries, not only in Mexico, many have been the result of an armed struggle. We can look at the French Revolution, the U.S. War of Independence, the Mexican Independence War, and that of other Latin American countries. The Mexican Revolution, which was necessary, brought about different reforms that were the result of this form of struggle. However, it could be, let's say, that we don't need to prioritize this form of struggle right now. And maybe change can be brought about through social movements. For me, this is desirable. And we must strengthen the social movement. I think social struggle is priority, and we must keep armed struggle as a backup. At this moment, I don't discard it, but I think it must stay in the background. I think that armed organizations must give the space to social movements to allow them to develop and grow. I don't mean that armed organizations must stop their struggle, but rather they must keep a low profile. The issue of violence is a little complex because it depends on who exercises it. We're made to accept and see it as normal when the state exercises violence, and that this is legal violence. Because supposedly there's a social pact that we've been taught which determines that citizens permit the state to maintain a monopoly over violence to keep the social order and protect the public safety of society. In theory, we accept this. But this social order and this public security also includes the status quo that defends capital, which is based on the misery of millions of people. It is rooted in the dispossession of their lands, their rivers, forests. It's based in discrimination, exploitation, and the destruction of life on this planet. Whoever wants to make a small change in this situation is already attacking the bases of the system. Since the state has a monopoly of violence, it can repress us. They have taught us to accept this, and that this is legal, and that the state can disappear people, assassinate people, rape women, if it's trying to impose some order. But against who? Against those who want to make change, even if they're acting peacefully. We have many examples of this. I can talk about cases here in Mexico. I don't know if you've heard of San Salvador Atenco. In this town, the federal preventative police raped many women. 26 women have publicly recognized as being raped and have denounced it. But we know that there were many more. There were two people assassinated. One was a minor and the other was a 20-year-old youth. There were more than 200 people detained, and all of them were beaten and tortured. And this was a peaceful movement. They have made us accept this violence. And moreover, they don't want us to call it even violence. However, when it's the people who are defending themselves to protect themselves from these beatings, they are accused of being violent. That's why I believe that we must look at who is exercising the violence at root. Let's say that this type of violence is to keep the status quo. Then there's another form of violence, which is to defend ourselves. I understand that you and Jacobo accept being rebels, that is, you admit to the charge of rebellion. Could you tell us why you accept the crime of rebellion, and what is the importance of not having denied this? Well, we can debate this. Let's say, according to the penal code, the charge of rebellion is a crime in the sense that it is stipulated that if a group wants to make a political change by use of arms, then it is a rebel group. Although there is another article in the Mexican Constitution that says that people have the right to change their form of government. The way I see it, all those people who want to change, whether it's through arms or by peaceful ways, they aren't criminals. However, the laws are laws, and they exist in that way, and rebellion is considered a crime. We accept being rebels. We never denied this. I think it's a moral duty, since we are part of the national, since we are part of a national leadership of an armed organization. We couldn't say I didn't belong to this organization. If we're in jail, and if we're detained and tortured, it's because of that. And denying it would have been like denying ourselves. That's why both my husband and I accepted to be rebels. The other charges were completely fabricated. We're not guilty. And that's exactly why at the end we were absolved of them. We were accused and judged and even sentenced for homicide and attempted homicide, as well as damages. But after many years of illegal and irregular proceedings, we had to fight the legal system's illegalities and prove them wrong legally.
existe lo que se llama un amparo, que es como una revisión.
Here in Mexico, there is a legal mechanism called amparo, which is something like a revision of all illegalities committed during the proceedings. As a result of the amparo, we were absolved of all charges, except that of rebellion. That's why we should have been released in April of last year.
Del año pasado, cuando nos absuelven de los otros delitos y nada más nos
quedan rebelión, for other charges, there was only the charge of rebellion left. For that charge, we had been sentenced to 5 years, which is why it's illegal that we're still in prison. In Mexico, if a sentence has already been executed, it's illegal to change it. We'd already been in prison more than 5 years. We'd done 8 years, and they decided to change the sentence to 12 years. That's why we're still here, and that's why we filed another amparo, and we're waiting for the decision.
Legalmente tiene que, la respuesta tiene que ser nuestra libertad, porque cualquier otra sería una ilegalidad. Sin embargo, no sabemos.
The only legal outcome to this new amparo has to be our freedom, because any other decision would be illegal. However, we don't know what the authorities will decide at the end of the day. The amparos have been showing that there are many violations in our case. When one needs to file an amparo, it's because there are unlawful proceedings. If the amparo is resolved favorably, it means that indeed there were violations. I think in our case this has been proven.
Efectivamente hubo esas violaciones. Creo que en nuestro caso ha sido demostrado.
¿Nos podrías hablar un poco sobre las condiciones carcelarias en que se encuentran tú?
Could you tell us more about the living conditions in prison of both you and Jacobo, who is held in a maximum security prison?
Sí, las condiciones son distintas.
Yes, the conditions are different in a jail like the one I'm in and in a maximum security jail like the one Jacobo is in.
Las condiciones de
there the conditions are terrible. I consider these types of jails to be a prison grave because the system is designed to isolate the person so that what's going on inside is not known by the public and the outside, and what's happening on the outside, the news, life itself, is not known on the inside. They have little contact with the outside. Right now, Jacobo only receives visits from 2 people. He's allowed only 1 phone call a week, and this phone call can only be 10 minutes long. The phone call is recorded as well. He's not allowed to have newspapers or magazines. He's not allowed to receive anything written about news in the media. No newspapers or internet or anything. He's allowed to watch TV, but he can only see specific commercial channels that don't really have much information, really. He's not allowed to receive images of any type or drawings or photographs. The system is designed so that he feels a constant nervous tension. For example, they make 5 or 6 degrading searches every day. They completely strip him in every search. These strip searches are very degrading. They take away small useful objects like toothbrushes or combs. Now they don't have any combs. They shave them so that the prisoners don't have to use them. There's a constant control through cameras. At nights, there are various revisions, and they light them with flashlights, even though there's a light bulb on 24 hours a day. The system makes them constantly tense and isolates them from the world. As years go by, this worsens. Because it starts to change the prisoner's personality. It's very difficult to bear. My situation is a bit different because these are medium security prisons. I have more communication with the outside, more visits. But Jacobo and I, even though we are spouses, we haven't seen each other in 9 years that we've been imprisoned. This is an extra punishment. Because the law states that when a couple is in prison, they have a right to visit each other within the prison. We were denied this right because from the beginning and finally, in the end, they've always separated us. We're now in different jails, and they don't allow us to have any type of contact. We haven't been able to communicate except with letters and lately by phone when we link the calls. There are other things about jail, for example. Now that I'm here, I've noticed the difference between political prison, which is my case, I'm a political prisoner, and other prisoners who are here because they committed some type of crime. One of the things I've learned is that all of them have a history that led them to commit this act. But it's not a life history that was determined by their will, but rather it was determined by their social situation, where they were born, the poverty, the unemployment, lacking opportunities, no education. So I call this social prison. Because they're here on the one hand because their economic and social situation pushed them to violate the law. Many of them are here because they stole a can of powdered milk, for example. Others are here because they stole money, because they had kids to feed. Most of them are mothers. Many of them are here simply because they're women. Because there was a moment when they opposed being raped, or because they defended themselves from domestic violence. And then they're here for assault or homicide, as though they should have allowed the aggression to happen. Another thing I've learned from being here in prison, from other prisoners, is that nobody is completely good nor completely evil. All people have something good. And even those that we consider good people have some defect. Those people that society classifies as criminals have very human qualities. And sometimes those who are not considered criminals or who are considered normal don't have any of this integrity at all. So you have a daughter that's currently residing in Canada, in Vancouver. Can you tell us how you've been able to integrate your role as a mother and as a social activist? Yeah, in fact, I had three daughters. She's the oldest one, the only one that survived. I was a single mom, and she was born precisely when I started participating politically in the social movement. I could say that she's never been an obstacle nor a burden. It's a different experience. It's not the same when you're single and you don't have kids. When you have a child, somebody to take care of, your life changes. Either you become responsible or you can feel that the child is a burden, but she was never a burden for me. I've seen that there are many different kinds of mothers in the social movement. They all have different ways of raising kids, and at the same time, they managed to continue to participate in the struggle. I chose to take her with me everywhere. I would take her to the marches and to the communities. I always took her with me. When the repression came, when I was disappeared, when I had to hide and change my identity, this is when I had to make a decision to whether or not I would separate myself from her and leave her with the family. And I didn't want to leave her, so I took her with me. When I entered the armed movement, I had to rethink my decision of keeping her with me or give her to my family. Again, I decided to keep her by my side. This was a good decision for me.
No digo que no haya habido riesgos, porque sí los hubo.
I think for me, I don't mean to say that there were no risks, because there were, but every person resolves them differently. There are colleagues who have left their children with their families. This is one way to do it, but not the way I did it. I also had the support of my husband, Jacobo, who's not her biological father, but has been her father since she was little. And she considers him her father. We both raised her and educated her, and I don't think there's anything out of the ordinary in this. It's completely normal for me, part of my life. Can you give us your opinion on what's happening in Mexico right now? The situation in Mexico can't be separated from what's happening on a global level. Mexico has been a poor country, not because it doesn't have the resources, but because it's been pillaged. This has taken its toll. There is poverty. There is discrimination. Unemployment. And all this has increased now in this world crisis, the financial crisis. There's been a huge loss of jobs. And more jobs are going to be lost in the months to come. And this, of course, diminishes the workers' ability to buy products. And wages are very low, and it's getting worse. Let's say wages can only buy 3 liters of milk a day. This is horrible. No one can pay their rent. People can't pay the education for their children. Wages just can't cover it. The entire family has to work. The husband, the wife, the children, all have to work in some way or another. They all have to contribute or find other means to make money, selling candies or washing cars to make extra money. Teachers are working as taxi drivers to make a little more money. So the situation is getting worse as the unemployment rate is rising. The majority of the population in Mexico is poor. The middle class has become poor as well. There's something which is impacting Mexico right now, and that's the current president. This president is considered to be illegitimate. He's not legitimate because he gained power from electoral fraud that they couldn't hide. That was fabricated, but people know about it. They weren't fooled.
como es débil,
this makes a weak government.
Para poderse sostener.
And because it's weak, it resorts to force to maintain its power.
Los movimientos pacíficos, los movimientos sociales son reprimidos.
So there's been an increase in repression.
Por el otro lado,
the non-violent social movements have been repressed.
Empezamos por el Tratado de Libre Comercio.
And at the same time, this government has been signing agreements.
Para México,
we can name the NAFTA with the U.S. and in Canada, which meant the end of the rural economy for Mexico, as well as the end of small industry for many people, while a few benefited from the export business. And then there are other agreements like the SPP, another problem in Mexico, which is the loss of sovereignty, seen in a number of ways, like the privatization of many of the strategic industries of the country, like the fuel, the privatization of the petrol business, the means of communication, as well as the transport system. So the SPP, the Security and Prosperity Partnership, ASPAN in Spanish, is another problem which concerns security. Beyond economic agreement, it deals mainly with security. This means that the U.S. is redefining its zone of influence as if its territory extended from the north of Canada to the south of Mexico. The U.S. is sending advisors to work here in Mexico, different intelligence bodies and agencies that are training. But in reality, these people are giving advice to the government how to control and repress the population more than what they're saying, the war against crime. That's the pretext. But in reality, they're trying to control the social life of the country. So it's an authoritarian government which opts to militarize even more, and with these agreements allows for foreign intervention. Recently, something which has been developing over the years, and it's very noticeable now.
Decir que se combate a la delincuencia, que hay mucha inseguridad en el país,
so-called war against crime.
El Estado da una lucha contra la delincuencia y contra los cárteles del narcotráfico.
It's constantly being said over and over again that there's a lot of insecurity in the country, and the state is fighting crime and the drug cartels. In reality, the state detains some of those drug cartel members to favor other cartels,
para favorecer a otros, y establece alianzas con algún cártel del
and is making alliances with other cartels and strengthening them.
Precisamente a la sombra de los últimos gobiernos, de estos dos últimos sexenios,
under the previous regimes of the last 12 years, the drug cartels have grown.
México, sino se ha ampliado a toda América, tanto América del Norte como América del
Sur.
Not
only in Mexico, but throughout the Americas, in North America and South America, and even in Europe.
Y no nada más es el narcotráfico, también es el tráfico de mujeres.
Furthermore,
it has
diversified its business, not only in the drug business, but it deals in sex trafficking of women and minors and child pornography. It's dealing in kidnapping and extortion as well. The state pretends to fight this crime and is really protecting certain groups and making them even stronger.
Al grado de utilizar a los cuerpos de pistoleros,
to the point of employing these mercenaries
as paramilitaries,
as paramilitary forces,
se ha dado casos en algunos estados del país que luchadores sociales son detenidos por los
In some states of this country, social activists are detained by the mercenaries and delivered to the police or military. And also, there have been cases where the police have detained social activists and they have delivered them to the drug mercenaries.
Es una de las cuestiones que en estos momentos está sucediendo en México y que tienen
so
que ver
alliance
con
is notorious,
nuevas formas de represión.
And this is what's happening in Mexico.
¿Qué papel dentro de
And that's why we're seeing new ways of repressing.
De esta alianza facciosa están ocupando
So the question is, what role does the DEA have in this mafia, in this alliance,
decimos, hay tratados
while they're advising the Mexican authorities?
De información y de inteligencia.
So we know that there are agreements for training and intelligence and sharing of information. But we see that they're playing a role in this corruption, in the mafia that's come to use and be of use to the powers that be, to the state. The current situation in Mexico also impacts the social movements. This is when the people say that this is not normal and we must do something. There is a movement, a strong movement, despite the constant repression.
Surge una organización en un lado y es reprimida, es tratada.
An organization is started somewhere and then it's repressed in order to squash it. But then there are other social organizations that emerge. Where will all this go? Where will this lead us? We have to see that the state is afraid. It's very afraid. And that's why it's militarizing and reinforcing its repressive forces. And investing in means of ideological control through the mainstream media. But the movement struggles and tries to bring about change. It is organizing itself.